Up until last May, I shared an apartment with my little sister, Gloria. She was going to college at the time and needed a place to stay. Gloria and I were only 2 years apart, so we got along great. She was busy with her classes and I worked a lot, but we usually made time to have dinner together, and we always made time for our Friday game night. It was more than a tradition. It was part of our lives. Gloria had proposed the idea. I was reluctant at first because I didn't socialize much, but I wasn't interested in hosting a party with all of Gloria's friends. But that first night, when we played some trivia game until 3 a.m, I'd completely changed my mind. I loved Friday game night, and I promised Gloria that we'd keep the tradition alive as long as we lived together. 3 years later, Friday game night was still going strong. Gloria complained about it sometimes, but I knew that she loved it just as much as I did. There were a few times when she tried to cancel, but the only reason she did was because she thought she was monopolizing my time. But I always assured her that it was a pleasure to have her friends over. Then, last May, Gloria told me that she was moving out after graduation. She was still staying in the city, but she wanted to move in with her boyfriend, Robbie. I was shocked. I always thought she was happy here. We had such a great situation going on, and I told her that. I told her that she needed to stay with me. We argued about it for an hour before she finally came to her senses. She agreed to keep living with me. That Friday, we had our game night as usual. It was me, Gloria, her boyfriend Robbie, and their other friends, Lisa and Dan. Even though Gloria seemed a bit on edge, I knew we were going to have a great night. The five of us sat at our living room table as usual. It was Robbie's turn to pick the game. Last time he picked Monopoly, which was a little boring, but this time he said he had something really special. He placed a Ouija board on the table. It didn't even come in a box. It was just a single faded board with the normal markings. He didn't even have one of those plastic reader things. We were just going to use a shot glass. "I don't know if I like this," I said. But everybody else was really insistent. They thought it was a great idea, so I was outvoted. Everyone else reached out and put their fingers on the shot glass, and I was too nervous to, though. Gloria grabbed me by the wrist and forced me to touch the glass as well. "So what's supposed to happen?" Lisa asked, as she was grinning excitedly. "We just need to ask a question," Gloria explained. "And then the spirits will answer."
"Okay," Robbie said. "It's my game, so I'll start."
He thought for a second. Then he asked, "What will happen tonight?" At first, nothing happened. And then the shot glass began to twitch, and then suddenly move. It slid over to the letter D, then the letter I, and then the letter E. "Die?" Lisa whispered. I jumped out of my chair. I didn't like this at all.
"Guys, let's put the game away. We have plenty of other—"
"No!"
Gloria shouted. "Sit back down so we can ask another question." I never saw my sister so serious before, and I begrudgingly sat back down. And then Robbie told Dan to ask another question. Dan, who didn't say much since they had got here, asked, "Who is going to die?" We all touched the shot glass and waited. Slowly, it slid over to the letter J, and then A. My name is Jane, so obviously that's what the board was spelling out. I let go of the shot glass before it could continue.
"Nope," I said. No. "We are not doing this."
"Jane, come on," Gloria said. "Just one more question. You can ask it." I should have refused, but there was something about the look on my sister's face that forced me to keep going.
"Well,
okay," I said. "Well, if I'm going to die tonight, how will it happen?"
The others waited for me to put my fingers back on the shot glass. When I did, the glass started to move again. B. A. L. Eventually, spelling out the word balcony. A chill ran down my spine. Was I supposed to fall off the balcony? We were six stories up, so that would definitely kill me. Gloria reached out and grabbed my hand. She was acting extremely sympathetic now, as if I had just gotten an official death sentence or something. It's okay, she said. Don't be scared. I'm not scared, I lied. But I'm definitely not going out on the balcony tonight. But you have to, Robbie said. Come on. He stood up and started walking towards the balcony. Lisa and Dan did too. Gloria tried to pull me up out of my seat so we could join them, but I pushed her hand away. This is stupid, I said. Ouija boards can't predict the future. Then there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to go out on the balcony, right? She argued. Come on, don't you want to have a fun game night? Fine, I mumbled. I still thought it was a ridiculous idea, but I followed Gloria out into the balcony anyway. Once we were all out crammed in our tiny balcony, I looked around. See, I'm still alive. I know, Gloria said. Then she suddenly nodded to her friends, as if she had given them some unspoken signal, because they all nodded back and then walked back inside the house. With Gloria and I on the balcony, they closed and locked the sliding door behind us. Gloria gave me a big hug. I can't keep living like this, Jane, she whispered into my ear. I asked her what she was talking about, and I couldn't believe her answer. She told me that she hated living with me. She said that I was holding her back, and all of her friends hated me in my stupid game night. That's not true, I said, my heart pounding in my chest. I feel like I could barely recognize my sister. Her expression was so dark. It was like she was a different person. You just won't let me go, Jane. So I have to let you go. And we decided that the best way to do that would be through your stupid game night. Behind the sliding glass, her friends were staring at us, waiting. Gloria planned to push me off the balcony, and they were all in on it. They hated me that much. Gloria dove at me. With her hands on my shoulders, she started pushing me towards the edge. My back was against the railing. Gloria kneed me in the stomach, and she tried to shove me over the edge. I would have fallen if I didn't grab Gloria by her ponytail and pulled as hard as I could. I twisted out and gripped her and dove to the side. Gloria couldn't steady herself in time, and she toppled over the ledge. I heard her scream all the way down before her body splattered onto the parking lot below. I walked to the sliding door and waited for Gloria's friends to let me back in. They all stared at me in total shock, but then they opened the door. I guess the Ouija board got the name wrong, I said. Now get the hell out of my house. It's been 3 months since that night, and 2.5 months since Gloria's funeral. Needless to say, I haven't had another game night since.
My name is Brittany. I'm a senior in high school with plans to go to Northwestern next year. I want to major in some kind of science, probably biology. I'm a really analytical person, so I've always been more interested in facts. Whereas my two best friends, Tanya and Jamie, are a lot more artistic than me. Don't get me wrong, the three of us get along really well. We've been best friends since kindergarten, but our interests are very different. Last month, Tanya and Jamie came over to my place to have a sleepover. And guess what Tanya brought? A Ouija board. I told her that I had no interest in that paranormal pseudoscience nonsense, but Tanya was insistent. Jamie didn't say anything at all. Eventually, I gave in. It was a rainy night, which made the whole thing even creepier. Of course, I refused to believe in spirits and magic, but it didn't help that thunder rumbled through my house every 20 seconds. My brain told me that this whole thing was stupid, but my heart still kept pounding in my chest. The three of us sat at my coffee table. Tanya set up the board, which I guess she bought used from Goodwill. We didn't even have one of those triangle things to ask our questions. Instead, we just used a shot glass. Tanya told us to put our fingertips on the shot glass. Jamie really fought against it. She kept saying that we were inviting bad spirits into the house. Nothing good would come of this. She was being very dramatic. But the three of us were best friends. All Tanya had to do was nudge Jamie in the side and give her a look. Jamie sighed and touched the shot glass. "Well?" Tanya turned to Jamie. "Since you're so spooked by it, why don't you ask the first question?" Jamie shook her head. I had a feeling she was worried that the board would magically reveal some deep, dark secret she had. I knew she was seeing a new guy because she'd recently started canceling on us a lot. That had to be her secret. So to ruffle her feathers a bit, I asked, "Who is Jamie thinking about right now?" The shot glass moved under our fingers. I looked to my friends to see if either of them was pushing it, but they looked surprised as I was. Slowly, we started to spell a word. D-A-V-E. "Dave?" I asked. "Tanya's boyfriend?" Jamie jumped up, horrified, and then ran out of the room. We called after her, but she locked herself in the bathroom. Then, after 5 minutes, she came back and explained what happened. "Tanya, I'm so sorry," she said. "Dave and I had sex. It was a big mistake, and I've been trying to figure out how to tell you." Tanya looked furious for a second, then instantly started smiling. "That's it? I know that Dave sleeps around. We both do. We have an open relationship." Then they hugged each other, and everything seemed okay between them. Even though Jamie was relieved, she refused to have that Ouija board in the house anymore. Tanya tried to stop her, but she grabbed the board, used the stove to set it on fire, and then chucked it out the window. After that, we all went to bed. It was a strange night, but I wasn't scared. Not until morning. I woke up early and saw that neither of my friends were in their beds. I went downstairs and looked around. No one was there, but the burnt Ouija board was sitting on the table, as if it was waiting for me. I don't know what came over me, but I sat next to the board and touched the shot of glass. I asked where my friends were. I started pushing on the glass, and slowly it spelled out, "Look out." Right away, I knew where they were. Lookout Hill was about 10 minutes away from my house. We'd hiked there a bunch of times before. I ran out the door. Even though I was still wearing pajamas, I raced through the forest, up the path, and onto Lookout Hill. Jamie wasn't there. "Jamie!" I shouted. My voice echoed into the valley below. There was silence at first, and then I heard Jamie's weak, quiet voice. "Help!" I ran to the edge of the hill, and I saw Jamie lying on the ground far below. Her leg was twisted to the side, obviously broken. "What happened?" I called to her. Very weakly, Jamie answered, "Tanya pushed me." And then I felt two hands on my back. Tanya was right behind me, trying to push me over the edge like she'd done to Jamie. I stumbled forward but didn't fall. I was able to twist around and face her. We fought along the cliff. She kept scratching at me wildly. She got me backed up against the cliff. I had nowhere to go. "Why are you doing this?" I asked. "She slept with my boyfriend," Tanya said, "and I would have kept you out of this if you hadn't found us." Then she jerked forward, but instead of standing there, I dove to the side and she toppled over the edge. I heard a terrible splat as her body landed on something. I quickly grabbed my cell and called 911. Then I climbed down into the valley to be with Jamie. I passed by Tanya's body. She was definitely dead. As Jamie and I waited for help to arrive, Jamie struggled to stay awake. The pain and loss of blood was really getting to her. She asked me how I found her, and I honestly didn't know what to say. The only reason I found her was because of that Ouija board. If I hadn't asked it that question, then poor Jamie would have died in the woods.
The weather was cold at that time of year, the type of winter that came with a dry mist stung the eyes and rasped in the lungs when one breathed. The snow was knee-deep, with the promise of more snowfall as the hours progressed. I recall the sensations I felt waddling through the puddle of snow towards the cabin. The alcohol in my belly had begun to alter my sensitivity, and I felt thrilled by cheap jokes Martin threw. All three of us heading towards that haunted cabin, far removed from the university campus, should have been all the red flags we should have needed to dissuade us from such a trip. We were boys, and it seemed to be that our own curiosity and its allure had such a hold on us already. "Careful, Michael," Greg, the third party in our trio, said to me as I climbed up the steps that led into the dilapidated cabin. "Oh, shit," I whimpered, collapsing with my hands held out to stop my fall. The ruins of the building shook violently. I felt all of the centuries of the building standing on its own since the university was established. The humble construction of wood and ingenuity was a testament of our university's prestige and endurance. But half a century ago, the rumors of the cabin home being haunted began to spread. The words changed perception quickly. I gasped as I picked myself up. "That was fine," I told the boys, and we could start recording our experience. There was hardly any way to know what to expect when we stepped into the airy building because the air outside and that inside had the same temperature. Whatever smell we may have received of blood or rotten flesh was masked by the cold. Three university students, armed with an Ouija board and a camera phone to pick up any strange incidents we found in the rooms. "Shut the door," Martin said to me as I walked in. I turned around and the frigid air whistled ominously through the porch. I hesitated for a small moment, took a deep breath, and pushed the door shut. The hollow lodging fell black. Greg's camera light came on. I gulped in an attempt to swallow the uneasy feeling that crept up my stomach. The general atmosphere was stained with an awry mood, and even though I was still unafraid, I could not help but notice it. "Are you ready?" Martin asked as he produced the Ouija board, placing it on the floor before us. I nodded in the darkness. I suspect Greg did the same as his camera light dropped on the Ouija board. Martin cleared his throat and placed his fingers on the board, snagging the pendulum that swung this way and that for answers. The frigid air made my heartbeat spike, but it was normal, I assured myself. I did the same with him, and Greg's hands joined ours. Martin had the first question of the evening. He asked if there were only three of us in the lodge after some consideration. The pendulum shifted across the letters. I could not tell what it was that triggered our muscles that way, but it felt surreal that I was so compelled to push the pendulum towards the Y and the E before settling on the S. My brows caved in suspicion. It was not the assurance that I wished for. I did not believe in the power of such a simple board game to speak truth or connect our natural plane to one of utter terror. "Is my name Josh?" Martin asked. Our fingers moved the pendulum, and it dragged from the S letter to an N, then to the O. A raspy phlegm blocked my airways, and I blinked instinctively. We all sensed that the Ouija board was working just as we wanted it to, yet it was strange that we could not rationalize how it worked and the science behind it. Martin wasted no time. "Is this cabin lodge haunted?" Martin asked. I blinked again. It felt like an eternity since before the pendulum we had our fingers on began to move. I watched in utter horror as it glided across the board towards the Y. My respiration turned shallow. The alcohol I had drunk before our silly adventure wore off my eyes, and I could feel the wind of something sinister drift closer to us. My fingers began to quiver, and my uneasy stomach rumbled. The pendulum shifted to the side of the letter E and stopped. My ears whirred. I wanted out. It was a game taken too far. "Yo!" I hollered. The pendulum had stopped at the S. Martin had a smirk on his face. The angle of the camera and the light cast his aspect in such a dreadful manner that horrified me. I wondered how he could manage to be so calm. I turned to Greg, and his eyes had a red glint from staring directly at the light. He was not laughing. He was expressionless. "Are we being haunted right now?" Martin asked, and my attention shifted from Greg for a second. The silence around the room deepened. Y-E-S. The bang so loud it tore through my numb senses, shaking the entire house. I was in disbelief at how swift the figure swept through the darkness. The bulk seemed heavy because its feet slamming on the floor carried so much force. Martin burst out in a shriek. "What the hell?" he blurted. I felt something warm spritz on my face. The metallic smell and the gargling bellow of Martin in pain sent my senses into overdrive. Greg lifted his camera to Martin's face. My knees buckled at the sight of blood dripping down the side of his neck, straight into the waiting mouth of a fat, bald man. The frenzy of my beating heart ceased, and all that was life in my head flashed right through my eyes. Greg hollered, and this grunting man turned on Greg, knocking the camera out of his hands. The room dropped into bleak darkness, and the camera bounced to the corner of the room. "Jesus Christ!" I cried, spinning around blindly to escape this unknown being that had begun to squeeze Greg's hand and drink out of it. My heart thumped on my ribcage in desperation for escape, even as my feet sought the same. I found the door first and pulled it open forcefully. I could not have welcomed daylight as gray as the day was in my entire life as I did in that moment. "Shit," I heard someone say, brushing immediately past me as I stepped out. What followed was a ripping batch of gunshot that caused a loud crash. I turned around, and a guard with denim pants and a checkered shirt was staring back at me with a gun in his hand. His gaze was curious, and his mouth hung in studied silence before he spoke. "Did it get you?" he asked. I was too shaken to have an answer for him. He did not persist. 20 years of haunting this cabin, and it takes you idiots to lure him out of his hiding in daylight." He kissed his teeth and looked down on the riddled body of the man. It all happened so quickly that it was at that moment it dawned on me that I had just been saved. "Greg, Martin," I mewled. "Emergency services will be here in 10 minutes. I called them when I saw you morons come in," the guard mentioned. The cold winter air running into my nostrils did not feel so cold anymore. It warmed me with relief.
I woke up feeling uneasy. My head felt heavy like iron, though also drained and disillusioned. I had been on medication for months upon months. Nothing ever changed for the better. My body only seemed to grow weaker, and that was her plan for me all along. My mother said I must take 10 pills a day to completely subdue my anxiety problems. She never showed me what the pills were, nor where she got them. I tried to figure out what they actually were, but I was never able to reach the decisive conclusion about what they contained. The risk was too severe. I just knew that whatever it was causing me to rot away, unable to exist as myself, but only as my mother's property. I would wake up every morning with a gaping hole in my stomach, churning my insides before I even left the bed. There was little left for me to try and improve upon or fix. I was merely a body left to suffer. I decided that day to take control of my life again. I had to begin, regardless of how terrified I truly was, of what roamed around the prison I was forced to call home. I clambered out of bed, barely having the energy to even stand, as I crawled across the bedroom floor to the wooden door standing solemnly at the other end of my room. It opened with a sinister creaking noise as I poked my head out, looking down either end of the hallway, checking for the immediate danger that I knew lurked somewhere in the house, waiting for me. After seeing the coast was clear, I crept out of my room, hastily stumbling towards the stairs, making my way down towards the kitchen below. I peered around the doorway, looking into the kitchen, and there she stood, standing as a statue in the center of the room, glaring at me, my mother.
Hello, Toby. How are you feeling, Toby? Any more head traumas?
My mother asked sweetly, still whilst glaring at me with her sharpened pupils, looking at me with an observant stance.
Hi, Mom. Nothing more than usual. Nothing to worry about, really.
What's for breakfast? I asked, trying to divert her attention away from the medication. I could see her fangs rearing in the back of her mouth, preparing to spew the same venom she always does. The same question. As rhetorical as it was, she seemed to go on about it relentlessly and with the same intense magnitude of my headache. I was finding it agonizing to even listen to her drone on about the morning menu of bread, water, and pills.
Toby, don't lie to your mother now. How is your head?
Her tone shifted into a sinister, accusatory passion. I felt suddenly numb with fear, but kept my head down and attempted to relinquish to her interrogation.
Sorry, Mother. I don't know what came over me. I feel a little heavy in the head, and my stomach doesn't feel so great either. That's why I was asking about breakfast.
I felt her glare subside, and she once again put on the motherly act she always did, looking at me with a wide grin, seemingly calmed by my apology. However, beyond the grin, her blood was boiling. She was verging on eruption.
Oh, dear Toby, let's get you some more medication then, shall we?
Before I could ready myself to answer her, she had already scuttled halfway up the stairs to fetch some more medicine for me to have for breakfast, along with my minimal meal of bread and water. I dreaded gulping down any more pills, just to have my stomach toil with the poison it released inside me. So this time, I was going to try and escape it. I truly believed that I would be able to hide them in my mouth, if only the pills had been smaller.
Toby, here are your pills. Wolf them down quickly so I can leave for work.
She slapped them down on the table with a vicious hand gesture, hassling me to take them swiftly so she could be on her way. I grabbed every pill in one great handful and shoved them deep into my mouth, burying them under my tongue. As I did so, I felt them soften against the underside of my tongue. The contents would release if I held them there too long. Mother needed to leave soon. When Mother asked me to open my mouth wide so she could check to see if I had swallowed, I did so with a nervous shudder, expecting only the worst to come. I could feel her gaze set upon the very back of my mouth. Oh God, I thought. She'd seen them. She leaned backwards slowly, her smile darkened into a foul look of hatred.
Toby, what did we say about liars?
Her stare was lifeless and piercing. I lifted my head, my eyes devoid of all remaining hope, and stared into her dead eye and muttered under my breath. I whimpered. Please don't. The curtains suddenly collapsed, and an ape-like fury took over her. She stooped deeply into a furious rampage, grasping my arm with her spindly fingers. She ripped me straight out of my seat, then in one bulk of emotion, she grabbed a nearby metal pot and launched it into the back of my skull. But before it could connect, I flung my body to the floor to dodge the blow. The look in her eyes amassed into two balls of flaming anger, penetrating my very soul as I pulled away from her bony grasp and sprinted towards the doorway with incredible haste. I could escape,
This was my chance. I reached the hallway, my mother close behind, tailing me with the pot raised above her head, the strike being prepared imminently. There wasn't much time left. If I didn't escape now, Mother would hold back with pummeling me into a thick pile of flesh, to then feed upon for the next few days. It was now or never. I grabbed the doorknob of the front door. I twisted it with a shaking grasp, the panic surging into me with the might of a charging rhino. I heard a click. The door swung open, and I fell back, startled by the vision of daylight. I had been locked inside ever since my mother's brain broke. That was over 10 years ago, when Father was still alive. I heard her footsteps boom through the corridor. The sound urged my legs to move in a rapid motion straight out of the doorway, out onto the street, and into the freedom that came with it. I could still hear Mother's bellowing, echoing far behind me as I ran. I didn't stop running. I couldn't stop running. Fear had injected itself into the ravines of my mind. The feeling of exposure felt exhilarating. I had escaped. I eventually came across a group of adults walking across the street opposite to me. I had been suffering such dire malnutrition for so long that I collapsed right there in front of them as I tried begging them for help. As my eyes dimmed, I could see them crowding around me, asking if I was okay. Quite clearly, I was not. I woke up in a white room the next day. I had multiple cords attached to my wrists. A man dressed in all white, holding a clipboard, mouthing to me words in some blurred dialect that I couldn't understand. He continued to speak until eventually I could make out the words. "Don't worry. Your mother is here to take you home." A skeletal figure of a woman then walked in behind him. I could make out the same wide grin. I thought I had escaped. I truly did. "Toby, it's time to go home."